Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, chapter 21. Text number 15.
Nadyastara tarupadaya makunda gitam. Avarta lakshita mano bhava bhagna vega. Alingana stagita murmi bujaya murare. Grinanti para jugalam kamala kamalo pahara.
Nadya, the rivers, tada, then, tat, that, upadarya, perceiving, mukunda, of Lord Krishna, gitam, the song of his flute, avarta, by their whirlpools, lakshita, manifest, mana bhava, by their conjugal desire, bhagna, broken, vegaha, their currents, alingana, by their embrace, stagitam, held stationary, urmi bunjai, by the arms of their wives, waves. By the arms of their waves, sorry. Murare, of Lord Murari. Grinanti, they seize. Pada yugalam, the two lotus feet. Kamala upaharaha, carrying offerings of lotus flowers. Translation and purport by the servants of His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When the rivers hear the flute song of Krishna, their minds begin to desire Him, and thus the flow of their currents is broken and their waters are agitated, moving around in whirlpools. Then with the arms of their waves, the rivers embrace Murari's lotus feet and holding on to them, present offerings of lotus flowers. Purport. Even such sacred bodies of water as the Yamuna and the Manasaganga are enchanted by the flute song. And thus they are disturbed by conjugal attraction for young Krishna. The gopis are implying that since many different types of living beings are overwhelmed by conjugal love for Krishna, why should the gopis be criticized for their intense desire to serve Krishna in the conjugal relationship? Namagyana tamarandasya gyananjana salakya chakshu militaram jena tasmai shri garvaya namaha. Vanchakalpaturvyascha kripasindhavyeva cha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha. So this is very nice section. As we know, every day, every day Krishna goes out to the pasture, every day he plays on his flute, and every day the gopis are absorbed in remembering Krishna and speaking about Krishna in exactly the same way. They never lose their attraction for Krishna. On the contrary, their attraction for Krishna is always increasing. Their love for Krishna is always increasing, and Krishna's love for them is always increasing. So these feelings that we're reading about now, they're just getting more and more intense all the time. So, and at the same time as well, our feelings for Krishna, as we read these pastimes, if we're serving nicely, following nicely, our feelings for Krishna will become greater and greater, more and more intense as well. And we'll get so much fresh, new realization as we read these same words over and over again. Because just like the Bhagavad Gita can be understood on so many different levels depending on our advancement, and we have experience of this as well. You might have read Bhagavad Gita years ago, and assuming that we're advancing, we read it recently, we get so much more out of it. We see more things. At the same time, I remember reading my diary that I was writing in many, many years ago. And I was truly refreshed by the realizations I had then. Because sometimes we forget what we realize in the moment, right? Actually, I was reading this chapter last night because I hadn't read it for a while. And I got some realizations about a couple of verses. And it was pretty exciting. And then this morning when I looked at this same chapter, I forgot what I realized. But then I realized something new. So sometimes it's like that. And traveling around, being in a different atmosphere, a different place all the time, and having so much paraphernalia to deal with. We have all our instruments and all our clothing, and I have all my suitcases full of pills and supplements. And I'm always like losing things, or like not losing them, but not remembering where I put them because it's in a different place every few days. And it's mind-boggling. Eventually I find them, but it's a little bit mind-boggling, a little bit frustrating. But that's not nearly as frustrating as when we have some realization and then we forget what it was, you know, the next day or the next hour or whatever, because we know that there's nothing as sublime and pure as transcendental knowledge. Or if we get some understanding, that, well, the lights go on, and it's a beautiful feeling because you can enter into it, you can explore it. And Prabhupada wanted us to write down those realizations as well. And every time I realize something and then forget it again, I remember Prabhupada saying that you should write your realizations, whatever they are, just write them down. And in this way, they come more, become more fixed up in our hearts as well, because writing is the same as chanting. Prabhupada explains this. And when we're chanting, then, or when we're speaking the philosophy, Prabhupada also indicates reading is not enough. One must hear and explain, then knowledge will become fixed up. So not only fixed up, but to the point where you actually, if you do forget it, you can look at what you wrote and remember it again and be refreshed by that. So it's like that reading these scriptures over and over again, because Krishna is ever fresh, his name is ever fresh, these verses in the Bhagavatam are ever fresh, and we can envision Krishna in ever fresh ways as we're reading about him playing his flute, reading about the rivers here, reading about the deer, reading about the demigods. So it's a wonderful experience. So when we hear people say, I already read the Bhagavad Gita, what does that mean? That you don't need to read it again. Usually that's what they're saying. I read that book. It's like reading some novel. Yeah, I read that one. People don't read novels over and over again. They don't read the newspaper over and over again. And but you do read the Bhagavad Gita over and over again.
Because we need to hear these things and we can understand them on ever fresh levels. And we know that. So it's not that, yeah, I read about Krishna going to the forest. I already read that. What else can I read? Anything else? Of course, there is so much because Krishna's pastimes are unlimited. And we like variety. At the same time, even though we like variety, we like to chant Hare Krishna for 12, 14, 24, 48, 72 hours, right? Because the variety is there internally. Because Krishna's there, dancing on our tongues. So
these are very nice points that are being made here in the purport. And it's interesting, the commentaries of the acharyas are so helpful for us, because if we didn't have them, then we wouldn't understand these verses on a deeper level. Just like there's a certain current in this chapter, how the gopis there, they're not saying it overtly, but they're feeling it. Like, why should they be criticized for their intense desire to serve Krishna in conjugal relationship if everyone else has the same desire? That's what they're actually saying. Here they're glorifying the rivers and how they react to the flute song of Krishna. And it's beautiful reading that. But they're also saying they're feeling this way. Even the rivers are feeling this way. What's so bad about us feeling this way? And then also I was remembering in the similar point, in the seventh verse, was it the seventh verse? Yeah, they say, for those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. They're talking about everyone watching the two brothers, Krishna and Balaram, go into the forest. And as they're playing their flutes and glancing lovingly at the residents of Vrindavan. So they say, for those who have eyes, we think there is no greater object of vision. That's beautiful. They're saying the same thing there. It's explaining the purport. If everybody's feeling that way, what's so bad about us having the same attraction? We shouldn't have to hide our attraction for Krishna. And then they also mention that later on regarding the demigods, how, and their wives, they're so attracted, and they're like of the heavenly planets. So if even they're attracted, why is it so unacceptable for us to be attracted? We're right here with Krishna, and even the demigods are attracted. So why not us? Why do we have to hide it like this? It shouldn't have to be that way. And also in these verses, another understanding given is that the demigods and their wives, they're relishing like anything this attraction for Krishna. Not just the wives, but the demigods, their husbands. So we're so unfortunate that our husbands, they're so envious, they don't allow us to express freely our love for Krishna. And even the deer, their husbands, they're encouraging the does to relish and pursue their attraction for Krishna. So we're so unfortunate that we're in such a difficult position because of our husbands being so envious. So those are very sweet understandings that are being given by the acharyas. That if we just read the verses, it's sweet, but it's so much sweeter when it's explained in this way. So much more meaning comes out. And
not just the meaning, but the relish, the love of the Acharyas for Krishna and Balaram and the residents of Vrindavan, that comes out. And that's what's really so attractive. That's what we're, when we're reading these things, that's what we're getting. We're getting the love of the gopis, the love of all the forest creatures, moving, non-moving. We're getting Prabhupada's love. We're getting the Acharya's love. And it's very important for us, because we're trying to develop that love. Sometimes we cultivate it, sometimes we don't. But when we do, so much facility is there. And that's how we imbibe that love by this association, just like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that when you're chanting, if you don't have that taste, if you can't concentrate, associate with someone that can while you're chanting. Get this association. So that's what we're doing. We're getting Krishna's association and all the Acharya's association. And the love is just pouring from these pages. And this particular pastime, as most of you know, Shivaram Swami wrote Veno Gita, which describes in such great detail the reactions of all the living entities in the forest, the reactions that they have to Krishna's flute song, the clouds, the rivers. Just goes on and on and on. And who is narrating all this? The glories of Krishna's flute song? The gopis. Just like here as well. Every day, same thing. Krishna wakes up after a long night's sleep. Is that true? No. Does Krishna sleep at night? No. What does he do? He's gallivanting around, right? Sneaks out of his house, out the window, climbs down, sneaks out of Nandagram, heads out to the forest. And he sports with the gopis. All night long, comes back just in time to be woken up, very, very tired. And then he goes down to milk the cows. And Mother Yasoda is encouraging him, get up, go down, milk the cows. The calves won't drink anything until, and the cows won't give milk until you're there, milking the cows, until they have your darshan. And then Krishna takes breakfast, and then it's a big festival. Krishna walking down Nandagram Hill. You've been to Nandagram? Krishna walking down the hill, and all the inhabitants of the village are crowded around to see Krishna and Balaram go off to the forest. And it's not like they're very happy either. They're very sad. They're so happy to see Krishna, but they know that Krishna's going to the forest, not going to be without Krishna for the whole day. So they're feeling great separation and union. And then finally Krishna's going off to the forest after breaking free from the loving clutches of Mother Yasoda, who doesn't want Krishna to go for one reason or another. And then he's going out, and you see Krishna over the backs of the calves and the cows. Then ultimately you just see his peacock feather, and then nothing. You just see all the dust. And it's explained that the inhabitants of Vrindavan, they're just standing there like figures in a picture. They can't move. They're just stunned in ecstasy. Some of them go after Krishna because they don't want him to leave and they want to have his darshan, but they become so stunned they can't move anymore. And then Krishna knows this, so he blows his buffalo horn. Wakes almost everybody out of their ecstatic stupor, and they begin their duties. But those who love Krishna the most, like Mother Yasoda, Nanda Maharaj, Radharani, etc., they're not awakened by the buffalo horn. And they're carried unconscious to their respective places. And Krishna realizes this also. So then he takes his flute out. He plays his flute. And that flute song is so attractive, so awakening, that everyone is functioning at least on a certain level after hearing that. And then what do? They go to their respective corners, different places in the area, and they, in different groups, they start talking about Krishna to mitigate their pain of separation. And so this is that's what the Venu Gita is based on. The gopis just glorifying Krishna's flute and how all living entities are affected by it. And here this chapter is similar description. And so we're so fortunate to be able to read this section at this time, because it's so sweet and we can relish it together, and this shared experience makes it even more relishable. When I see someone relishing, then I feel like relishing. And you can also share your relish, your good feelings, your smiles, your realizations. So it becomes that much more attractive. If you're reading and you know others are relishing, then you also become more enthused to read so that others can hear. Satam prasangam amavirya samvido bhavanti ritkarna rasayanakata. In the association of devotees, hearing the discussions and pastimes of the Lord and of his devotees, it's so relishable to the ear and to the heart. And this is how we become fixed in Krishna consciousness. Does anyone have any comments or questions on anything that we discussed so far?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you very much for an amazing shower of nectar. The question is that at one time there was a Gopi Bhava Club in L.A. and Srila Prabhupada became very upset because the devotees were meeting in secret and discussing the glories of the gopis and their feelings for the Lord. And yet in this purport, the admonishment is, why should anyone fault the gopis? So where do we draw the line in the relishing to avoid appearing sahajic or mundane, or where it may seem cheapened? How do we draw that line?
Well, everything has to be taken in proper proportion and proper perspective, and that's what the spiritual master helps us understand how to do. Like, it's not that we don't read the Bhagavad Gita, it's not that we don't read these other sections of the Bhagavatam, and it's not that we don't fully absorb ourselves in service. In other words, if we just sat all day and not just read Krishna's pastimes, but focused on Krishna's conjugal relationship with the gopis, then we'd be missing so much to the point that we wouldn't become purified, to the point that we need to become purified. On the contrary, we can very easily fall down. If we just try to enter into the mood of the gopis like that, it's artificial. The way we enter into that mood is by the mercy of the spiritual master, by following his instructions. So he knows, he's like the pharmacist, he knows exactly, or the doctor, knows exactly what supplements we need to become free from this material disease. So everything has to be done in proper perspective. And there are even sections of the Chaitanya Charitamrita that we shouldn't absorb ourselves in. They're too rasika. It's not that you don't read it, but it's not that you go back and keep reading it. So, and Prabhupada makes all these points, what to stress, how to stress it. And devotees used to ask Prabhupada these questions as well. We used to go on Harinam every day and distribute Back to Godhead magazines. We always had something to distribute. Then when book distribution became more prominent by Prabhupada's desire and devotees realized they could distribute more books without the Harinam party in certain areas, then they started doing that. They started going to shopping malls. They started doing so many things. So devotees asked Prabhupada that question, we're not doing Harinam as much. So Prabhupada said it shouldn't be stopped. You can do it less, but it should never be stopped. So that's just one example. Or what about deity worship? What's the relationship between Sankirtan and deity worship? Prabhupada also explained that. Because sometimes it's really hard to understand what the priorities are. And what about taking care of your kids and serving full time in the temple? That came up also. One letter I remember Prabhupada wrote to Lakshmi Moni Manaji, she asked that question. She's a head pujari. She said that she didn't know what priority to give, raising her children or serving the child or serving the deities. Prabhupada wrote back and said, your child is your deity. So, but without Srila Prabhupada, what do we know? What do we know what to do, what not to do? Because all the rules and regulations are there. And sometimes you have to break one to follow another. So which one is the priority? And this way, we're being brought up so nicely by Srila Prabhupada. And if we follow him, then, as Prabhupada explained, everything will be revealed. Not that we artificially try to enter into some mood. That mood will come. At the same time, Prabhupada wanted us to read Krishna Lila, and we can tell by the result that it has how beneficial it is for us. At the same time, the more we serve, and this we can tell also, the more we serve sincerely, then we're able to hear much more nicely. Because the hearing and the serving are interrelated. You can't separate one from the other. And Prabhupada said, if I have any credit at all, it's that I never deviated from the order of my spiritual master. So, and that order of Prabhupada's spiritual master to come over to the West, Prabhupada took that upon his head, never forgot it, and he fulfilled it. So the service and the service attitude will enable us to enter into Krishna's Leela. And that's what Prabhupada was very upset about, that they were taking one and leaving behind the other, and taking one in the wrong way, not knowing how to take it anyway, either. So, does anyone have any comments or questions about that? It's a very important question, a very important point. And I think for most of us, it's not that we're absorbing ourselves too much in Krishna Leela. I don't think that's our problem. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. As you were saying, there is so much to be realized, and for sure Krishna, based on our attitude, reveals. And but we get so much caught up in our day-to-day life, and sometimes a thought comes, if I'm working, I keep working and try to do the best of my Krishna consciousness, or do the Krishna consciousness, and sometimes it is said that actually my job is my service to Krishna, and But somehow, like, I sometimes have a feeling that in due course time is going, and yet there is so much to be realized, so much to be. So how, and sometimes a thought comes that, okay, should I keep a target, okay, like 5 years, 10 years down the line, I'll do this, and then I'll
when you say I'll do this or that, you mean
do my job, like, and then like
more hearing and chanting,
self-sufficiency, and then or I have to do in parallel, like, what are your real, like,
so you're asking because you have so many responsibilities with your job, you're at this point you're putting aside other things that you're considering, that you think are very important, right? So when how do we decide when we should attach more importance and more priority to these other things? Is that what you're confused about? Yeah. Just like Prabhupada had to wait so many years before he could come to the West. And Prabhupada had to make a monumental, how do you say it? Herculean effort to come to the West. Right? Because he knew that's what he had to do. So sometimes we don't know, right, what we absolutely have to do. But sometimes it's apparent, and that's why you have a spiritual master. Like, there's no question of householders giving up their jobs unless the family is prepared to live in a completely different way and happy about it, right? So sometimes we don't have a choice. And in one sense, it's good, because at least we know what we have to do. We're not doubting that. And our challenge is to feel good about it, knowing that this is the situation Krishna has put me in, and I have so many wonderful gifts that Krishna has given me, and if I'll do this service, and I'll make the best of it. And then sometimes questions come up. Should I work less and have better sadhana? How much do I need this money? I have another job offer. I don't have to sell my soul to the company. I could work 9 to 5, 5 days a week, and have so much more free time. There was one devotee who got his medical license. He was prepared. He could have made so much money opening up his own practice, but he just wanted to work at a medical clinic in 9 to 5 because he wanted to do his sadhana. He took one, you know, fraction of the salary. But this is how he wanted to live his life. Sometimes we have that choice, sometimes we don't. Everybody's situation is different, and we're not living in an island. On an island, we have others that we're responsible for as well. So it's not our individual decision how to go forward very often. And of course, it's not the type of question that one could answer specifically at this point. But it's something to ponder. And if we're always pondering how to increase our service, how to increase our hearing and chanting, if that desire is there, Krishna will fulfill it sooner or later. We just have to wait for the opportune time, Krishna's indication. Everything we should do as gracefully as possible. That's the best I can do right now. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Mother Kunti has a comment about that. This one doesn't seem like a question. It seems like an enthusiastic statement.
Based
on her mature realization.
No, I'm just remembering an example of Tamal Krishna Maharaj. He had a question like this, and he used the example of a python. A python, it's not aggressive. It's not a type of snake that runs after. It just sits up in a tree. and it waits until some hapless, you know, weaker animal once walks under and just drops down on top of it. So he says, so you have to be like a python. You have to just wait and then take those opportunities.
Yeah, when the opportunity arises. Of course, pythons aren't the only animals in the forest. There are others that are a little more aggressive, but that's, it depends on our situation. And I'm sure he was answering that very specifically to somebody. And sometimes we have to be like that, because there's nothing we can do. We're just stuck in one place. Not just physically, but our situation. But at the same time, we have to always be open to Krishna's indications and take advantage of them.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the realization.
Hare Krishna.
I want to know, in one personal situation, when we are about to retire, which seva would be better for us? How we decide on that?
How do we decide when we're about to retire from family life? What service would be best for us? It's a good question. Of course, everybody's situation is unique, different. It's a time to increase our hearing and chanting. And chanting in our movement means not just amongst ourselves, but giving others the opportunity to have Krishna consciousness. So traditionally, Brian Prabhupada would explain to us that one in Vanaprastha ashram will travel and preach and prepare for sannyas. This is not a movement of bhajananandis. We don't just sit and concern ourselves with our own advancement. We do that, but we also undergo the austerity, physical, mental, emotional, of giving Krishna consciousness to others. And when we do that, we gain a lot of strength because we're pleasing Guru and Krishna. And we gain not just, well, strength in the form of being able to control our senses due to that higher taste, and also becoming detached, because we become so attached to our greater family, all living entities, and entering into situations where there's loving exchange with so many people, that broadens our perspective, broadens our understanding, and so our family attachments can become less and less by that activity. Otherwise, if we're just sitting all day with our minds, we'll think about the past. But if we have something in the present that's completely relishable, something we can absorb ourselves in. So, Prabhupada always recommended, in any stage of life, brahmachari, grihastha, vanaprastha, sannyas, that we spread Krishna consciousness. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj is pointing out also how the vanaprastha aspect of our movement will be increasing more and more as devotees get older and they become situated in a position where they're not so much encumbered materially. And this will happen, and it's happening now. They're able to be freed up to preach that much more. And we're seeing that, and we're seeing how the vanaprasthas are becoming a very prominent wing or aspect of our movement. Rupanugaru, would you like to to explain some of the realizations you've had now that you're getting out a little bit more? And there's Rupanuga right there. You know, Rupanuga sitting. If you can maybe just say a few words about vanaprastha life.
There's the tendency to become a little lethargic whenever one enters the retired era of life. And it helps to have someone occasionally goad us just a little bit and help us to realize that we should be out giving what has been given to us, sharing the gift. It's not an easy thing to do, to leave the comfort of one's own situation and go beyond. That's why it's very valuable to me to have someone whom I respect very much tell me what I should do. In other words, share the responsibility. Remind me that my spiritual master went to great lengths and put himself in uncomfortable situations so that other people around the world could hear about Krishna consciousness. So I have to be reminded of that so that I can maybe come to the end of my life feeling that I have done something of some significance for my spiritual master.
Hari Bol. Very nice. Very nice example for the community to have. Now, Jamil would like to say something. He is also in the Vanaprastha Ashram, having given up the comforts of his home. He's undertaken the austerity of traveling with me, which is one of the biggest austerities one can possibly imagine. So he'd like to speak about his realizations on that topic.
Sorry, Hare Krishna. There were two topics, but I don't know which one to start. Yeah, because this is recent. It's just I thought that, and in Bengali say that Trimata.
Trimata?
Trimata means one who passed three stages. One who passed three stages, like young life, youth.
Young life, three stages, young life.
Shoshob life, young. Shoshob means when your age is like 15 to 20. That is a shoshob.
Oh, so then there's another stage, 15
another
to 20.
Stage, yeah, and then from 20 to 40 is one stage.
Then from 20 to 40, another stage.
And 40s to 60s, another stage.
40 to 60, another stage. Okay.
Yeah. So after 60, people considered to be like getting old, you know.
After 60 people, yeah. Okay.
That's old. What people take retired life, right?
Retired. Okay.
So
that's 5 years younger in India than here.
Yeah.
We're fortunate.
So anyone past this three stage, they become very mature people because they've been learned by seeing, by own life, practicing. They learn. They got the fruits, ripe fruits.
Uh-huh.
So the ripe fruits can give more vision to the world. Unfortunately, in the present time, they neglect the elderly people. And that's in the Vedic time, the grandparents used to be more like a pillar of the family.
Yes.
And that's why you can see in Mahabharata, everywhere any problem used to come, they used to go Bhishma Pitamaha to get the advice. So anyone taking Vanaprastha, they're like a pillar of the society. Unfortunately, we neglect them. And those who take shelter of spiritual life, they become more stronger. So, of course, the guru is there to guide, but at the same time, that those who are taking the Vanaprastha life or 65, whatever, they also have natural tendency, their own realization.
Well, just one before I forget. It's not that they're not gurus. Diksha guru is one guru, but we can have many Siksha gurus that we take inspiration from, right?
Yeah.
So, like you're saying, the Vanaprasthas, they're also in that position, that okay. Setting an example.
And yeah.
We can take them as guru in many ways.
Yeah. So is that Prabhuji mentioned, someone, the guide, yes, we can take guidance from everyone. But the person taking Vanaprastha, he already got it, that realization by himself, by seeing so many things. and observing himself in the life, make so many mistakes, learn from the mistake, you know. So we need, like a Prabhupada disciple, those who are in the movement, they learn over the years. We should have them, you know, like when they go pass away, it will be very difficult, those who are learning by this, you know. So that's the elderly people are very important, very, very substantial in the society to have old people in the movement, you know. You know, we always looking for younger generation, but how to train this younger generation without old? You cannot train them. So we have to have very important for the older people to protect them and preserve them, not to just throw them away, you know. It's very important. Another that Mataji said, python. I don't know what contents Maharaj talk about python sitting there and wait for the opportunity. I don't know, there is different, maybe it's some certain reason Maharaj give that example. But I consider that we should not just wait, Prabhu, just wait, have Krishna mercy, you know, everything will happen. We have to do our own work, you know, it's not just wait. Many devotees say, Prabhu, don't worry, everything going okay, just whatever Krishna arrange, you know. I don't believe that.
I don't think anybody does. I don't think that was the point. But in case anyone does believe that, you shouldn't. God helps those who help themselves, right? That's what you're saying. Of course. Yeah, of course. Yeah, and because you don't know, then you don't know.
If you're the doer, but never forget that Krishna's Krishna's the real doer. What's that quote?
I remember that vaguely, but I don't know the date. But it's a good one. It's a good one. Something about depending on Krishna. Act as if, I don't know. Does anyone remember that quote? It's a good one. No, it's but yeah. Okay. Always depend on Krishna, but act as if. All right, something to research. Whoever comes up with the quote gets a bonus. Okay, does anyone have an iPhone on them? Or does anyone have a phone? Do you have a phone? What's the number? Does anyone have a phone that they know the number for? Okay, well, last time I was here, we took calls from out there, and we got a few calls from different states, questions devotees had, or just comments that they wanted to make. So if anyone's listening from a different state or country, and you have a question to ask, or you just want to say hello, you can call in. The number to call is... Oh, here it goes. 214. What is it? 214? What's the number?
214-354-5613.
That's 214-354-5613. I'll say it one more time. 214. What is it?
354-5613.
So if anyone wants to call, we'd love to hear from you. And if you have a question, now's a good time to ask. Actually, I should have mentioned this at the beginning of the class. That way you, whoever is out there, would possibly think of something that they wanted to ask or say. So it's a little short notice. We apologize. I'll be giving class again on Thursday. We can do this again, and maybe somebody can remind me. Last time I was here, it was very enlivening to get the calls from, I forget where it was. A couple of different calls we got from different... Yes, Guru.
I just had a comment about the verse. I just thought it was so wonderful the way it describes the cows in Vrindavan and the way they hold their ears up and cup them in a certain way so they can hear Krishna's flute. And I was just thinking that that cow body...
Can you talk into the mic so people can...
I was thinking that that cow body is designed to hear Krishna's flute.
Because of their ears.
Because of that ear, yeah.
Yeah, we can be envious of the cows.
I think somebody is. I know what a little bit of the verse is about, isn't it?
Oh, that's nice.
All over the world, you go see the cows, and so go see the Vrindavan cows. Is something special. Their eyes. Vrindavan cows, their eyes and their face. So beautiful. It's true. You can see their eyes and their face is so beautiful.
Yeah, especially if we compare them to the poor cows we have here. Yes. Yes, Prabhu. Well, the people need to hear what you have to say.
Maharaj, we've heard many times about the necessity of associating with people who are more advanced than we are. Sometimes we're concerned that those persons with whom we'd like to associate have so many responsibilities and so many disciples that perhaps our wanting to associate with them would be something of a burden. So how can we know, especially when we don't have anything in particular to ask, whether it would be burdensome just to go and hang out with that person?
Well, of course, it depends what you mean by hang out. When we're with a senior devotee, we should try to, fit in such a way that it's not an inconvenience. For example, if you're going on a walk with a senior devotee and he's chanting, so we should also chant. If he says something, if he interrupts his chanting and he says something to us, that's very nice. But it's not that we should take the cue and then start talking to him about whatever we're thinking because he's chanting. So that's just one example. We really have to take the cues from the senior devotee that we're with. That's proper etiquette. And if we're really attentive to the needs and the desires and the situation of a senior devotee, there's always some way that we can render service, even if it's just by hearing. But it shouldn't, and Krishna will give the opportunities, but it shouldn't be at his expense in any way. I learned that the hard way with Srila Prabhupada. I've told this story a few times. We were in Los Angeles in 1973, and I had just come from Buffalo. We moved out there, and because I was had been the president of the Buffalo Temple, they asked me if I would like to go on a walk with Srila Prabhupada, with the other devotees who were chosen to go on the walk, so I was very excited. And when we got out there, this was on the beach, I saw there's so many senior devotees, sannyasis, devotees who had been in the movement longer than I, and there's like a pecking order. If you're not, the most senior devotees got to walk closest to Prabhupada. And so there I was trying to figure out where I fit in. And I wanted to hear what Prabhupada was saying, but if I just was at the end of one of the wings, then I'd never hear what Prabhupada said. So I was trying to work that out, and then I was looking at how it was set up. And I saw that there was nobody right behind Prabhupada. So that was a great opportunity for me to, if I listened carefully, I'd be able to hear everything Prabhupada said. So I got right behind Prabhupada. And it was nectar, just hearing everything. Then Prabhupada would stop, everybody would stop, and I was right there. And then Prabhupada would go, and then I'd keep listening to Prabhupada as he was talking and walking. Then all of a sudden, because I just wanted, I was looking for the nectar, all of a sudden I realized I just stepped on the back of Prabhupada's shoe. And it came off. So Prabhupada stopped, and one of his servants put it back on. And then Prabhupada looked back at me, sort of looked at me, but it just went like this. Walk further away. So I realized the hard way that I had overstepped my bounds. I wanted to hang out, I wanted to get the nectar, but if I was thinking about serving a little bit more, at least not stepping on Prabhupada's, the back of his foot and his shoe, then I would have been a lot better off. So associating with senior devotees, we have to really maintain that service attitude. Of course, with everybody we have to. If we maintain that service attitude and we're really disposed to serving and accommodating and helping in whatever way we can, then that's our key to unlock the door of that association. And as far as being too busy, certain things devotees are never too busy for. They're never too busy to have kirtan together, have class together, and accept some service and be at darshans. And I've always seen that with my senior god brothers. If someone really wants to be with them and spend time with them and has some question or just wants to hear, there's always, sooner or later, there's always nice facility to do that. I think it depends on our eagerness and our ability to be sensitive enough to not be an inconvenience in any situation that we're in. Just like Radhanath Swami, his parikrama is now there. 5,000 devotees go on parikrama. And he's right there. So, and Prabhupada also, the devotees were always jockeying to be closer to Prabhupada, but everyone was able to get some nectar association. After a while, Prabhupada didn't want the devotees writing to him directly. He just couldn't deal with all the correspondence. So he had his temple presidents write to him, and it was like that. There was a little more distance. So the devotees who were at first closer to Prabhupada, when Prabhupada got so many disciples and followers, there wasn't that same intimacy, couldn't be had. So there is an extent to the intimacy that we will be granted in the association of such exalted souls. And so we accept that also and try to get as much as we can, because as you were saying, it is very important that we have that association. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Thank you very much.